Welcome to Showboys, a podcast that delves into the world of film, TV, and gaming. In this week's episode, Nick and Mike are back on Arrakis, facing sandworms and political intrigue in Dune Part 2. Will Paul Atreides fulfill the prophecy and become the Lisan al Ghaib, or is the fate of the universe just another game for the manipulative Bene Gesserit? So, what's Dune Part 2? Hello, welcome to Showboys. We're here, the OG duo again. You know, I guess.
I wish it was the OG trio. That would be better. But
rip. You know what? Now you mention it. So You know, we've been running airing reruns of old episodes of our entire backlog over on Twitch.
Oh yeah, Spooktober's playing right now.
So if you're ever bored and want to just watch a random episode of Showboys, it's literally running 24/7 for like the next 16 days, which is just wild to think about in the first place that we have that much content out there. But 50th episode rerun was earlier today during the workday, and I happened to pop in. I was like, oh, I saw Cody's little pixel person, and I was like, man, I wonder what Cody's up to.
Big things.
Ryan's pixel person, the guy who helped get our Discord up and running. I mean, Bianca was on screen when pioneers. I popped in.
They were pioneers.
The OGs.
Ahead of their time.
Yeah, for sure. Check out twitch.tv/showboyspodcast if you're bored. But we have an actual episode that's not a rerun tonight. It might sound like a rerun. Wow, I just realized the last two episodes we did, Masters of the Air Part 2, Dune Part 2.
Yeah.
Like two of the last episodes we recorded before.
We're back. Madness. Right back at it.
Picking right back up where we left off. How you doing tonight, dude?
I'm doing good. Doing good. I'm doing good. Yeah. That's always a funny meme floating out there. Doing good. Good times. I'm never at my desk anymore.
It really makes my workday very sad and lonely.
So sad. So sad. Nick's Discord icon is just like, was it gray?
Yeah, just forever gray.
An empty circle. There's a hollow circle of emptiness.
It reflects that hole in my heart, Nick.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Or you slide right in.
pause. Stop. But yeah, no, all things are good. I wish I could have swore I watched Dune 1 on Netflix. Then I went to Netflix and it was not there.
Yeah, you're correct.
It's on Max now.
Yeah, it's there for a limited time.
Really quick switch of hands. That was like a month ago. Well, I watched it in February.
It is an HBO thing. Like it first came streaming on HBO. I think it was actually one of the first like dual. We might need to fact check this, but I think it released on HBO and in theaters at the same time. It might have been one of those movies because it's like, you know, peak COVID. Yeah. So they're experimenting. But then you mentioned that it was on Netflix, but only for like a couple more weeks when I first watched the first Dune. So, yeah. But
I think I'm going to wait till they're both on Max and then just watch them back to back.
Nice.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. It was a busy day today. We had soccer practice for the 9-year-old. So
9-year-old, holy moly.
Yeah, her birthday was on the 13th. So
accelerated growth down there in Florida.
Yeah, it's all the sun.
It's just sprouting right up.
Yeah. But no, so Tuesdays are always a little hectic. Her practice is from 6 to 7. It's only like 10 miles away from our house. Sure. Guess how long it takes me to get there?
40 minutes.
Close. It's usually about anywhere between 45 to 55 minutes.
That's brutal.
But then the ride home is only 22 minutes. So
that's insane.
Gotta love the
got all kinds of weird
Fort Myers rush hour traffic.
Got all kinds of weird time loops down there. Daughter's aging extra quick. Takes really long time to get 10 miles. Not Ohio. You can't measure things and measure distance and time accurately.
Yeah. This is what everyone tuned in for, of course. My highly detailed analysis of my route to soccer practice. But it goes, it's on the road that leads to 75, which is our version of 77. And it's like right at 5 o'clock. So,
yeah,
you know,
disaster
infrastructure. It's great down here.
Infrastructure.
But yeah, I'm excited. We're going to be talking about Dune 2 tonight. It's been a while since it came out, but we've had a busy month. So I'm excited to finally talk about it. Before we do, got to shout out top tier patrons, Tim B, Yusfage, and honorary member Joe C. Thank you guys so much for continued support. You guys rule. If anyone else is interested, head over to patreon.com/showboyspodcast. Check it out. Sign up today if you feel so inclined to help support us financially every month. There are four different tiers, all at different price points. I think the lowest one is like $3 or something. So like less than a cup of coffee, you could help.
One, three, six, and 10.
$1 for just a measly dollar.
You could just out here on the street, just like putting our hats out, like throw a buck in there, man.
Hey, but it's not for nothing. You get a few extra things. So go check it out. Things like exclusive monthly episodes, bonus content, stuff of that nature. So go check it out. And if you feel so kind as to sign up, we would greatly appreciate it. But Dune 2 came out. Beginning of March.
March 3rd.
We just, you know, bad timing, really. Masters of the Year wrapping up. Dune coming out during March. That's like our busiest month with the March Madness stuff. So we're a little late with this episode, but in typical Showboys fashion, we don't really care about timing. It's when we get to stuff, we get to it, and we'll talk about it for quite a while.
It's still putting up numbers in the box office, so, you know, it's all fair game. It's still the only thing my Facebook shows me. I don't know what happened. Like all of a sudden I'm in all of these Dune pages and they talk a lot about Dune, and there are some passionate people that hate this movie, love this movie, and everything in between.
What's worse, Dune fans or Star Wars fans?
Oh man. Dune fans, I guess, to some degree, because Star Wars, like I think they just get a little bit more pissy, you know, and like throw tantrums. Whereas like Dune people, like they really dig their heels in, and it's like foundational to their being, like where they stand on like the Bible, which is Dune apparently.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's intense. And it's crazy how many people are just like, these movies suck ass, like just straight up, they hate them.
Yeah, I feel like those people are probably idiots. Like, they probably, maybe a few chromosomes short or something, I don't know. Yeah. It's like, coming into watching both of these movies, having no prior Dune experience, except one of our friends we used to work with being you know, his Steam name being Mod Deeb, like that was the extent of my Dune knowledge. The movies are awesome. Like they're just as just a movie itself, like
crazy.
Beautiful, like visually beautiful, scored masterfully, like the story is very interesting. I mean, I guess if you're like a super hard. Okay, so I used to have a friend who was really a huge comic dude. It's not Jordan. We are still friends. So if it was Jordan, I would just say my dumb friend Jordan. But I used to have a friend who's like super into comic book movies, and particularly DC and The Flash. And when the Snyder stuff started coming out, especially, I know I said particularly The Flash, but his main gripe was Superman and Man of Steel. He was like, oh, I can't believe this is the dumbest movie ever. Superman's not like that. So I guess, you know, you get your super fans, and if it's not like 100% like page to screen, yeah, like accurate transfer of character and story, like I could see that. But as a newbie to Dune, I was like, this is awesome.
Well, I think that's what it is like there's so many new people flooding into the Duneverse, right? Like this whole IP. And typically, like, you know, we're probably probably tons of people, but it's just, we just think it's fun and exciting. One, because it's like the next epic movie trilogy or however many they're going to make, right? So it's the next big movie IP. One, they're just fantastic movies, period. But also it's this like huge universe full of lore and all that stuff. Like it's everything that all nerds want, right? And here's amazing movies to introduce you to and get you involved. But on the other end of that spectrum are people who like read the books literally in like the 1960s, and they're basically all of a sudden on Facebook like, oh, it's not what the books are and what Frank ever intended, and oh yeah, all these new people can get off our Dune lawn. Like that's basically their attitude. Like they could care less that there are they would Dune rather lawn have zero
very Dune sandy lawn.
Yeah, they would rather have zero new Dune stuff and just be like, go away, everyone. Leave me and my Dune alone, my precious Dune.
You got to love gatekeepers. Always fun. Always fun.
Oh, they're the strongest gatekeepers. Like, at least, like, Star Wars gatekeepers are, like, fallible, right? And they know it. Like, they're just gatekeeping the gatekeep. Whereas, like, Dune gatekeepers are, like, it is a national treasure or something that no one knew about. Except for like 1% of people, and they were happy to leave it that way. So it's almost like a travesty that it has a blockbuster movie now with it.
Man, speaking of national treasure, can we just like appreciate the meme-ness that is Stilgar? Like,
oh my god,
in Dune 2, Stilgar is 100% the most amazing character.
He legit had like comedic moments, like how on board he was.
Yeah,
the just
every time Paul does anything, he's like, Lisa, don't get you.
No, it got me when Paul like denied it, and he's like, oh, of course he would deny.
Yeah, that's exactly what he would do.
It's him. And he turns to his boys, and like they all get like excited. I'm like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, man, I just any excuse I get to like use a Stilgar gif in any chat, it's always taken. I can't believe. Yeah, he's just like, I was not expecting the laughs I got out of like Stilgar moments in that movie, and it was actually like pretty nice.
Yeah,
usually I think it's just because it was like, I don't feel like they were shoehorned in, and like
they were genuine, right? Yeah. And it brought this comedic like relief or this sense of like just lightness to a very dense movie otherwise, right? Mm. And like those were fun moments, like because somehow it played up as like these people have finally like found their Jesus. Like imagine how giddy people would be like if they literally found Jesus, like just like trolling around, like they're trying to tell him like, you are Jesus, right? Like it's like seeing these people have this like genuine moment of like happiness who otherwise live pretty rough lives, and somehow that conveyed it wasn't campy, like it was just, it was funny, but like it was a good it was good.
Yeah, it seemed like those would be reactions he would have to those situations.
Right.
But yeah, so overall, like what are your initial thoughts of part two?
As of today on the 26th, I believe it crossed 500 million in the box office. I think it was globally or maybe domestically. I don't know. But still doing good.
I did my part twice.
I want to do it twice, but
do I don't it. Think I'm going to get the
chance. Oh, it's totally worth it. If only IMAXs were more common, I'd do that. But overall, again, like we talked about in part one, super happy I started this whole journey in February, like a month before part two came out. So like watching part one, then part two is just like the best way to go about it. Sorry to everyone who saw Dune part one in 2020 or whatever. I'm sorry. I did it better.
Don't apologize. They could watch it over. It's not like,
yeah, but they had to live.
The only copy of Dune.
Yeah, but they had to live with this sense of like, will there even be another one?
That's true.
Like, they didn't know there was going to be a second one.
That's true.
And the way the first one ended, that would suck. Like, that's where you're like, yeah, this movie like was ass because we're not getting part two.
That would make the review that I read in our part one even funnier, where it's like, this is the longest movie trailer ever.
Yep.
And the movie never comes out.
It just ends. It's done. You know, had the eclipse timeline and then just canceled.
Don't even joke about that.
Don't even joke. It's gonna get canceled. Overall thoughts on part two. I thought it was amazing. It was fantastic. It was definitely better than one, in my opinion. Because one is just a giant trailer, and two is where like stuff actually like hits the pavement and hits the sand and starts pounding away.
I like what you did there, because you got the thumpers and the sand.
That's right.
Look at you.
All kinds of.
Did you write that? Did you write that, or just right off the top of the head?
Right off the dune. I mean the dome. So we're all over.
Yeah.
But no, it was awesome. And obviously, you know, coming right off of Masters of the Air, this is just Austin Butler part two is what this is. Or part three. We've had like three episodes now where we've talked about Austin Butler. He's just like the current trendy actor man that is just doing good things out there for the people.
And you know, speaking of Austin Butler, like, as shocked as I was to find out that his like normal talking voice is how he sounds in Masters of the Air, I was equally as shocked to hear him first speak in Dune 2, and he just sounds like a mini Bill Skarsgård or Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah, there's a lot of good like content out there about the
Baron Jr. Is that you?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great, like, Skarsgård didn't know like he was gonna do that, because everyone's like, did you guys plan that? Nope. He's like, he was talked, and all of a sudden he's like, he sounds like me, kid. Then Austin Butler's just like, yeah, I figured, you know, he grew up around him, he would sound like him, so I just watch a bunch of Skarsgård and figured it out. I'm like, that's so good. There's all those little details, and the fact that Timothy and the director, they spoke in French on set, because they both are fluent French speakers. That was their own private language that like allowed them to be in that creative space. Like when they were talking, it was like completely like private in their own heads kind of thing too. And I saw like, there's so many just cool details that also from a production aspect, like it's just fun for like movies like this that are just larger than life. But yeah, I mean, I know the first one won a bunch of Oscars and nonsense like that, but like this one has to, because visually, like, it has some of the most impressive things I've seen. You know, it's hard to do new things, and it definitely does a lot of new things. Gideon Prime or whatever is a really good example of that. Like, that just blew my mind. I was like, I don't know what I'm watching right now, but it's awesome.
Yeah, I had to get some, I had to like, I think actually you explained it to me, but that took some like extracurricular like digging of like, why is everything black and white all of a sudden? But I also like,
it's not even black and white, it's infrared, which is even crazier, because like you think it's black and white, but you're like, this is like, it's not like a black and white movie, you know. It isn't Sin City, it's literal, it's great infrared, though,
because it has a Sin City like vibe, because you know, they're in the Colosseum, and it's everything is hard whites, hard blacks, like, but
when they're indoors,
the Bene Gesserit women, when they're like in their little like press box thing, like you can see like a it's not full color, but like there's like faded color, right? Because they're kind of like in the light, but they're kind of in the shade. So like, and then when they're walking through the hall, when it's dark, like, it's dark, but it's color. It's just those little details are so cool.
Yeah, because the sun is literally what is making it like that. So if you're not in the sun, you're not getting hit with the infrared. So it's just wild. And obviously
the fireworks looked super cool.
Yeah, these like inky, just like ink and water firework things going on. And it's not like by any means like a slow scene. Like it's huge. Like everything is just extra scaled up on that planet. And even the sun was like super close. There's just aesthetically, it was just gorgeous. Then you have Austin Butler like debuting like into an arena. Like talk about an entrance into a franchise, which is impressive too, because he's already coming into a, you know, the part two of a big movie. And then like, he makes a splash like that. Yeah. You're like, this is what I came for. Let's go.
Yeah. His character introduction was pretty rowdy. That's for sure. You know, one thing that, I'm just going to dive right in.
Yeah,
because this.
Well, did you like the movie?
Yes, I loved it. It's kind of funny. I took my father-in-law was up visiting. We went and saw it. That was my first viewing. He watched the first one like the day before they. Actually, they flew down here on a Tuesday, and we went and saw it that evening. So he watched it on Monday night. I watched it.
That's sick.
Actually, I don't know if I watched it on Monday night that time. But that was the first viewing. He like fell asleep. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, oh, this is so amazing. I look over and he's like zonked out.
I don't blame him though, because when I first tried to watch this like last year on it's Max,
the bass.
it's that bass line in the score, man, that just like numbs your senses if you're not like into it. So
yeah,
I get it.
And then either, I think it was 2 weeks later, Becca's brother's family was in town. And, actually, I don't remember if I saw it with her dad first or her brother first. Maybe it was her brother first. Yeah, it had to be a brother. It doesn't matter. I saw it, both times I saw it with one of Becca's family members who was in town.
Because you're just like converting people at this point. Yeah. Because like, because shortly after you're like, I'm all in on this. Like,
yeah,
I'm in.
Yeah,
I'm 100%.
And I'm bringing everyone with me.
Watch this 3-hour movie.
I actually think I took her brother first, and the whole time it was a pleasant experience. But the whole time he didn't watch the first one, so I'm like, when something was happening, I was like, that's because blah 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 blah, and he's like, that means nothing to me, but thank you. And then I liked it a lot more the second viewing. One, because I wasn't kind of explaining what was going on. And two, like I was able to like, I had already seen it, so now I get to like soak it in. Mm-hmm. And like but yeah, one thing that popped into my mind, and I want to talk about it now because who knows if it'll stay in my mind by the time we're done recording. But my big question in part one was the like legitimacy of Paul's messiah-ness. I don't think that's the right word, but like the prophecies, like all of the Lisan al-Ghaib stuff that was being told, or you know,
Yabby.
Yeah, being like foreshadowed and stuff in the first movie, like how legitimate was it? Is it like true? That are the visions like real, or is you know, we saw in the first movie Paul's like very well read, very studious, like he was definitely studying Arrakis before they left, so like knowing their ways, like, you know, one of the prophecies are like kind of would naturally happen if someone is studying the planet a lot before they go there. And I think this movie kind of answered my question, but I would like to know your opinion first before I share mine. So like, what do you think Dune 2 did to answer the authenticity of him being the actual like Lisan al-Ghaib, or if it's just like a propaganda type thing?
Yeah, I mean, the second one, you know, speaking from my memory before my mind was polluted by the internet and all the groups I'm in, and people's opinions and just slow, like, not spoilers, but like general directionness of it. But I also take it kind of like Star Wars at this point. Like, I'm more interested in like how you, any of that crap even comes to be. Not really the fact that it does or doesn't. So I remember us talking about that in part one. Part two does a pretty good job, I think, about still threading that needle, because like you have the, you know, the naysayer group, you have the obviously people that were just all for it. He obviously is like in denial about it, but then like just kind of owns it like toward the end there. It's definitely a good bit of propaganda though, because they do focus on how much, not a lot, but like they do drop the hints that like the Bene Gesserit have installed, and like that is their propaganda, right? This whole thing, like that was the naysayers, that like these are just like these witches like telling this false prophecy. And like Paul is still equally adept and able, right? He isn't just some oaf out of the sand. Like he knows things, and he's good. He's also the right calibrated mix for this prophecy, being a male Bene Gesserit, and also of a noble royal house. So, you know, if it was just like walking in out of the dunes and like, hey, my name's Bill and I'm the prophet, right? Definitely full on prophet. But since it's Paul, I think there's a strong case that it's, you know, it's still not,
yeah,
legit Messiah, like he's some sort of deity, come forth kind of thing.
Yeah, man.
Because they do a good job at like presenting both sides. Like you have this undertone where like his mother's in on this whole ordeal. She's even manipulating the situation against the Bene Gesserit. And it's like, and then, you know, Paul just decides, you know, he's like, oh yeah, I'm just going to kind of do this thing that I happen to have all the tools to do, including nukes and all that fun stuff. So,
literal nukes. Yeah.
Yeah.
a whole lot.
Yeah.
yeah, man. Geez. You know, I was dead set in one opinion, but now just recalling towards the end of the movie, that last, you know, the last act, I don't know, maybe I can explain it, maybe not, but you know, we know the Bene Gesserit, they have, you know, some obvious like tricks up their sleeve with, you know, they got the voice, there's some, I don't know if you want to call it spiritual or magical, like
spice.
Yeah. And his mother's Bene Gesserit, and he's been trained in the Bene Gesserit. So like we have that little tinge of like this almost supernatural side of the Dune verse. But I think it's pretty clear that like Paul and his mother are not the good guys. They're not like good people, good intended people. I think maybe Paul started out maybe with good intentions, but I think the evidence leans more towards like it being propaganda, it being a way to like control the what are they called again? Fremen. There you go.
It's like Freeman, but
yeah.
Just without an entry either. Fremen.
The Fremen. Because, you know, his House Atreides was going there to get desert power, you know. Then you look at things like, you know, obviously he's having the dreams and visions, but the Bene Gesserit lady is talking about dreams and visions. That could just be a Bene Gesserit thing. That doesn't have to be like a...
Well, it's also a spice thing.
Yeah, that's not a Messiah thing. Like,
right.
That can be explained away. You have, you know, of course, you have like the drinking of the water of life and the resurrection from Chani's tear, right?
Yeah.
His mother's not... Lisa, okay, even she survived the water of life, right?
Yeah, but she's a female one, and the trick was that like a male shouldn't even be able to survive that. So like whatever the mother ordained or whatever she was, like only women can handle that blue liquid.
Right.
So that part but
he
still,
says though in his mother's testing, like he's like, she's a Bene Gesserit. She like has trained her body to be able to like withstand poison. So why couldn't he do the same thing? Because he's also that. And he came from that blood. I don't know, maybe like.
So was that an act that he was resurrected with the prophecy of the tear from, I mean, like her?
It could be coincidence. I don't know.
Right.
Could have been planned because that's a heavy theme throughout the whole movie. Like you mentioned, the Bene Gesserit are the puppeteers pulling the strings all across, you know, the known galaxy to us with the Harkonnens and the Atreides. Those are the only houses we know of, but they're pulling the strings. They're making power moves like
all over the place. And the thing I don't fully understand yet is his mother, right, against the will of the Bene Gesserit, created a male Bene Gesserit, like heir. So I don't know if that was out of like love for Leto and like him and like him having like an heir and like, I don't know, like what's her motivation there? Because, you know, her motivation, whatever her motivation was there to defy them, like ultimately leads to this better hand that she has even over her own like shadow council.
And she like gives me some not good vibes. Like she's up to something nefarious.
And Paul's inherently good, but like obviously when he puts the ring on and he like steps up at like the big meeting, like he willingly chooses, like, because he takes the ring off and like he was kind of shedding that vengeful path.
Was he shedding the vengeful path, or was he doing it as like an attempt to get the Fremen to accept him because he's like hiding his nobility? It was it more of a ploy or more of like a you know, I kind of want to distance myself from this life.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell. It's very hard to tell.
Yeah. Yeah. It all too conveniently kind of like comes together like at a flip of a switch. Cause like we've laid all these well ground plans and now it's time. Right. Mm-hmm. And at that point it's too late because the Fremen are all in and they just need him to like stand up and say, let's go.
Yeah. And it's like, it's tough because you can see it with Johnny, like,
but
I think he genuinely like cares about Johnny, but then if he flips the switch and he's like, the power move is Florence Pugh. Sorry, Zendaya. Like and how easy he was able to just like flip that switch. I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah. But it's weird though, because like, was it Gurney? There's no way he would have been able to know that he was still alive. Like that was pretty happen chance that he stumbled upon Gurney, who also happened to know where the nukes were. Like that was all super convenient. And obviously it was Gurney plus his mother, basically Gurney also in his ear, like, bro, you are Atreides. Like you can do this, man. Mm-hmm. Like Messiah or not, like one, they think you are. Two, we got tools here. So
literal cave full of nukes.
So it may be like he was good until like literally every card, every like ace was in front of him and he's like, bunch of kill billions. That's the other thing, like that's the end game, is like half the universe or whatever gets like wiped out. I think the stats that I see online are 62 billion people and 100 worlds are sterilized.
So he just goes Thanos on everyone?
Kind of, yeah. Well, the end of the Holy War.
Spoiler alert.
Holy War causes that. Mm. But we don't know if that's going to come to be. Because already, that's the other big gripe, is like people, the ending was changed from the books. Like, I think from the fight sequence with Butler is where it started to change a lot. There's a lot of, like, where we get into, like, the politicalness of all of that. And even, like, the Emperor, like, there's a bunch of things that changed there that I don't understand. But, like, that's a big hot topic, too, is, like, the director specifically has changed things. But also, a lot of people argue it's for the betterment of the characters on screen. Like, Chani, like, is another big gripe because people are like, she's just all in on, like, she's all in on Paul. Like, she doesn't have this whole, you know, don't do it, Paul thing going on. But, like, everyone's like, if she was just kind of all hail Paul, I love you, and, like, that's the depth of her character in the books, like, that would make a poor character on screen. So little things like that.
Yeah.
But that's what he tells Chani, though, too. Like, he doesn't want all those people to die. Like, that's why he didn't go south for so long. He's like, I'm not doing it, because it's going to... See, he had, like, genuine, though, like, resistance to the prophecy then. Like, he genuinely, I don't think, wanted to do it.
Yeah, and that's good writing, by the way. That we're, like, sitting here having this conversation where we're, like, literally both points are very valid. And it's hard to tell what... like his actual intentions were. But you get to that final meeting place, right, where only the leaders of the Fremen are allowed to speak in the siege or whatever. And Stilgar's like, do it. Just take my life. Take my spot. And Paul's just like, bro, dude, chill. But in terms of my original, you know, question and thought of him, the authenticity of the Ghaibness, I'll just call it, he's there and kind of to prove his deityness, divineness, or whatever. Like, he tells specific people, like, about their lives that only they know, right? And it must have been accurate because the two people that he did that to, like, basically dropped to their knees right on the spot, and they're like, oh my gosh, Lisa, okay. So, like, how would that happen, right? Is that, like, another Bene Gesserit, like, mind thing? Or
I have to say so. Like, they kind of just have these Jedi powers where, like, they can probably read minds. Like, if you can talk to people. And also, I don't think
never mind.
Usually people in that state, like, they wear a lot out, like, open in their mind. Like, I think that you probably tap in and just, like, know these things.
That's a good point. I was going to say, I wonder if, like, he, like, used the voice on them to get their reactions, but we didn't, like, every other time the voice is used, it's very dramatic and, like, apparent. So that thought immediately got shot down. But that part, though, is the only true part that makes me go,
he was just in his pocket, man.
Maybe he really is. Maybe there really is something to this.
And you're like, son, I gotta leave.
I looked at my brother-in-law and father-in-law exactly like Stilgar looked at it. As it is written.
As it is written.
That's really the only aspect that I can't, like, naturally explain away in my head of being like, now this is all just like a power play, like manipulation of the masses to achieve a goal. But I think just the way Denny, like, handled the characters again, I'm going through the audiobook, actually. I'm like 2 hours in, so I got a long way to go. It's like 11 hours or something. So I don't have a comparison to the books, the characters that we see on the screen to the books, but the way Paul is written in these movies is, like, super, like, fascinating, because even at the end of the movie, I think Paul is not supposed to be liked in the hero, right? But there are many, many moments in both films where I'm like, he's like got good intentions and like he's doing good things, and then all of a sudden, like, he just does the heel turn and he's nuking half the planet, and like, you know, I mean
that's, you know, and talk about last week's episode when we were talking about Hitler, like Hitler was kind of the same thing. Like, he was doing a lot of good thing for the people present and like witnessing his rise, but he did some like really hard heel turns where it's like everyone else is like, oh yeah, that's no bueno, right? Just probably like a lot of the houses at the end of the movie where they're like, yeah, no, we don't accept bro as emperor now, it's just because of whatever shenanigans is going on down there, we're gonna invade. Which I have some logistical concerns about how that all plays out, but maybe hopefully 3 just like continues that whole scene where they're flying upwards to just duke it out in the skies. I don't know.
Duke it out. Yeah. Speaking of Hitler and Masters of the Air, you know, is what, a week since we last met and recorded.
And you've been slamming Front Lines.
Yeah, man, we got to take a little Dune pause. World War II, the front lines, or from the front lines. Bro, that's crazy stuff.
When I was watching that last year, I just had to keep like throwing messages out in Discord. I'm like, yo, this is crazy.
It's like,
and that one's good too, because it's a lot of stuff, stories and footage that I have not seen before. And I've seen my fair share of like World War II stuff. And like, I was just dumbfounded that I'm like, man, they're still digging up like interviews that you would think happened in the past couple years, but like they're digging up interviews with like World War II vets from like 20 years ago, and they're just now like playing them. Crazy stuff like that, and just like archive footage. Nuts.
Yeah, some of the footage though, I'm like, during all this craziness, how did they get a camera like right there at that angle for that shot? You know? I don't know. But bro, some of the stuff, first off, so hard to watch.
So they faked the moon landing, they faked World War II. Well, wait and tell me next.
World War II is not real, dude.
Oh god.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's nice knowing you, dude.
Yeah, let's not go down that road.
No, but like, man, it was just, that's hard to watch sometimes, but it's also like we talked about, it's like super important to see that. And like the episode 4, the part where the British just like, or it's like, yeah, we're just gonna bomb the heck out of Hamburg and hopefully the civilians get out. Yeah, we dropped our flyers, we did our part.
Yeah, just pulverize
it. And they just like killed thousands and thousands of civilians. I was just like, that is messed up. And the dude recounting the story was like, yeah, that was messed up. But yeah, if you guys, you should watch World War II from the front lines. It's pretty crazy. Back to Dune. Speaking of like wars and stuff, like that last third of the movie, so epic. Like that, there is far more action in this movie than the first one, obviously. But I would say, even so, it's not like a super action-packed movie, at least not to like the back third-ish.
Yeah.
The action scenes we got, though, my goodness, like, I'm even thinking of the spice harvester when they're like
trying to take out the
Onoth. Yeah, they ambush the mining operation, and then the ornithopters up there, and they're like running along with the spider legs of the harvester, and oh my gosh, that whole thing was
in the way that scene even like comes about, and that's just like the niceness of how he's directed this movie. Like, it wasn't set up like a heist scene, right? Like, we didn't go into that scene At least I don't remember it as such, like that we're going to get a harvester takedown, right? Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like, oh, here's a harvester crew, right? Let's see our
yeah, I want to say that's like, it starts out with his little like sand straw and the desert mouse is like fiddling around with it. And he's like, get out of here. And then all of a sudden there's like, we're just going to do this epic ambush with absolutely no warning.
And it just takes off. It just takes off. And it's just like, I don't know what's happening, but like, it's going to keep escalating.
Dude. But like them, first off the like machine gun fire from the copter itself, like the burst, so cool. So audibly pleasing, like sounded amazing. But they're like the way they hid behind the legs of the harvester, the way that Paul had to draw the fire so the shield would go down so the rocket could like penetrate the shield.
Mm-hmm.
Super cool. But I think my favorite shot of the movie is them running and the copter just like exploding and crashing in the background. That's like one of the coolest looking scenes, I think, of both movies, probably.
Yeah, that scene is super impressive when you see it. I mean, a lot of those scenes and sequences are just super impressive. And the way they're pieced together too, to tell the story is very natural, but like, it's not just like kind of tossed in front of you. Like you don't know what you're watching yet when it's all happening. Right. And then you piece it together later. So just like the Gideon Prime thing, like you didn't know you're going to get gladiator match. So, you know, so like, it's just the way they're set up is so organic. And that's just like, that movie's so grounded. Like obviously there's CGI in it, but they built some really big sets. Like
they did,
the interiors are all real basically.
Paul's sandworm riding thing, not a lot of it because it's a giant sandworm, but a good chunk of that is done with practical effects. Yeah. And Timothy literally getting sandblasted trying to do that. But like they built like those parts of the worm, like where he's like hooking on to the flaps and pulling up, like it just, man, if you
I always
love practical effects. So like anytime you can get something practical in there is a win in my book. But
I also like how that's explained, like how that works. Like to me, it made a lot of sense as it was happening. I'm like, how is this going to work? Like, how are they going to ride this thing? They got these hooks and it pulls up like it's like nose vents or terry whatever,
folds.
Right. And like it gets sand in there. You don't want to get sand in your terry fold. So you got to go to the surface.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
Let those flaps air out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy, crazy, crazy things.
But I think your point, though, of like how they just like ferried onto the sandworms, especially with like Paul's mom's like adult baby carriage thing that they're like toting her around in. Yeah. Like how were they just like, all right, buddy, can you just pull up, like just hang out here for a second, let us load up and then we'll get going? Or did they just like chuck everything on and then somehow like
people on those Facebook groups, they have all the answers to all those things. And I've seen some people explain that away, because usually it starts off with someone who has not read the books ask a question, and then 1,000 comments later, like you get your response somewhere in there along with that other stuff. Like it's crazy. But you have your three groups. You have the person that asks the question, cause they just say, I've never read the books, I don't know what's going on here, but I just have some basic questions. Someone who read the book and is honest with you, someone who's read the book and hates you, more people that have not read the book and are just like, this movie freaking rocks. And then you have the people that are like calling everyone else in the group, like Nazis.
Classic.
All the internet. That's the other problem, though, is there's a lot of like weird social undertones in this story, right? Whether it's like power, religion, like basically this book hits on like freaking everything. So there's a lot of people in there like charged up with like source material, and like people can just say something. I was actually reading one earlier today where it was like, he was just like, I don't think Paul did anything wrong. Someone really quick who was like, yeah, it's probably because you're like some sort of like racist, like, yeah, just went on with it.
This white guy.
Yeah, just like laid into it. But I'm like, wow, man, you just did like a whole profile on this dude because like he asked a question or just like made a statement about why Paul isn't a bad guy. But like it's loaded, it's charged up in there. And yeah. It doesn't help because the themes of this story are like everything. So like
all the hot button issues.
nothing is like baseless. Like no one's like, I'm like, well, yeah. Technically that's on topic.
Yeah, I mean it is. It's loaded. You have a lot of like Middle Eastern references and yeah, influences. You have the religion aspect, you have the power aspect. I mean, Paul even throws abortion in there at the beginning of this one.
Yeah.
Where he's like, you know what? I just kind of wish Mother would just send you up to the cosmos. And it's just like, whoa, bro, let's come on.
So in the 84 version and in the books, his sister is a toddler. So good call on the director to be like, let's not go about it that way. Let's just have
she's just born a toddler.
I don't know, but like in
she
the book,
just was there already as a toddler.
I have no idea how she came about, but like her parts, like in the book and in that movie, is just like a 2-year-old walking around, just like being a Bene Gesserit, using the voice and just like talking as a full grown adult, right? Yeah, so you see how that would be kind of, yeah. So like as weird as like I thought that was weird, I'm like, hold on. I'm like, the fetus, the like unborn baby is completely like up to speed here and like asking questions. I'm like, this is weird. But then I come to find out like that was the conservative choice. too. The more stylistic choice to like go about that. I'm like, man, this universe gets weirder and weirder.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed seeing more, speaking of weird, like more like barren apparatuses, like his like floating balloon things and
oh,
like,
the Baron, yeah.
It, like his methods of everyday travel.
That dude, man, he likes his slime oil baths.
Ugh, yeah. Whatever that is, it's like the villain version of Back to Tank.
It is. Like, what should he heal in? A back to tank, but make it black, sticky. Yeah, just
filled with oil.
Yeah, just fill with oil. But it's like oil that has something else in it. I don't even want to go there. Like, it's just weird. It's a weird substance.
Yeah. Obviously, the epic battle at the end. Insane.
Wait, so cool. Okay. When I left this movie, though, there was still a ton of moments. They didn't make it bad. Right. But I was thinking about how any other movie would get shredded for how often it was barely an inconvenience. I get there's a lot of off screen training Paul got from, your boy to like ride the sandworms. Mm-hmm. But like, we just pretended 9 months went by and it's like, all right, let's do the thing. Great, cool thing to see, and no one's upset, but like, I don't know. Even that last battle, it's accurate to the books because the last battle doesn't have a lot of description as to how it went down. Like, it literally just happened like that, like, really quickly. It all just fell apart for the Emperor.
Mm.
But watching the movie with no context, I'm like, that was super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Yeah, I mean, they did spend about 30 seconds being like, all right, here's the plan.
Right. It's going to go
and
like
they
this. Just,
they executed it very well.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, perfect. In terms of, I don't think that one is as much of a barely an inconvenience as like the sandworm riding. Like,
right.
All right, we're going to give you, you know, this is how you prove to us that you're a Fremen. Go go ride a sandworm. And then it's literally the biggest one ever seen in human history. And he's just like, stands up and he's like, the battle thing I can see, because the whole movie is Paul fighting alongside the Fremen, right? He's earning his stripe. He gets his warrior name, which, by the way, I did one of the Leonardo DiCaprio, like, he said it thing, because, like, as I mentioned earlier, one of our friends in Steam, his name is Madib's Left Hand. And I was like, oh, I finally, like, have the context of, like, I still don't get the left hand part, but he changes it pretty, he hasn't in a while.
It's the hand that he wears his ring on.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I was trying to figure that out, too.
I'll ask him why it's left hand, but there were there were a lot of times though where he would change it and it would just be like goofy stuff. But I was like, oh, that's Madib. That's what it is. Which was a really cool moment for me. But you know, he gets his warrior name, he's pulling off all these ambushes on the Harkonnens and stuff.
We'll pause. The fact that name, how we know it before knowing what it was to, it did take me a little bit longer to like take that seriously. I was like, hold on. Wait.
Yeah. All I could think of is Crossland's like dumb Steam picture.
Yeah.
Cartoon face.
Right. And like, it's supposed to be this like very like serious moment where like he's getting his name and like what's his name is just like, he's just like, oh yes, that's perfect. Like the mouse.
That's exactly
like
what the Gaib would do.
As it was written.
Yeah. But him like being able to plan and coordinate an attack, even at that scale with the Fremen, not like as much of an inconvenience as...
No,
like,
that was good. That was all good.
Getting the entire community to jump onto a sandworm back, like, to make the trip south. That's definitely barely an inconvenience.
Well, they hyped up the trip south, and like Angus kind of shows up, and then like all that stuff happens that he didn't want to happen. I'm like, well, that, you know, that escalated quickly. I guess we're doing the thing that you didn't want to do, Paul. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if they made these things less of an inconvenience or more of an inconvenience,
it'd be a long ass movie.
It would be like a 5-hour movie.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that's the parts that I get. Like, one, it's a long movie, and like we don't need to see like a training montage of like sandworm riding. So like, I get it, but I don't know. By the end of it, definitely it was like just a lot of epic big things happening, and like a lot of foretold things that just need to happen for the sake of happening. And I'm like, well, you know, we're just doing the thing now. Yeah.
I also like
they did have to work at that ornithopter though to get that thing down. That was, once again, that scene was awesome.
That was definitely an inconvenience.
That was an inconvenience for sure.
What was not an inconvenience was killing the Baron and Rabin. Like 10 seconds, like Paul just walks in, he's like, goodbye, uncle. And then Gurney's just like, Rabin, see you later. Like, I mean,
well, yeah, that like that, yeah, for sure. Like that scene, like once they roll up on the Emperor, like in his throne room, and like all that unfolds, I'm like, okay, like we're just getting right to the
no foreplay. We're just
like apparently there's 10 minutes left in the movie because we have no time to like linger here.
Yeah,
Emperor, you suck. You're done. Okay, everyone on the ships that we just, you know, commandeered in the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Everyone on them, because we're going to go fight these guys now. Like, they're just rolling. The
Baron, the killing of the Baron not as much of a letdown for me as the fight between Gurney and Rabin, because, like, Gurney kind of builds that up, you know, well, I got this scar, blah, blah, blah.
Did Rabin die?
Yeah, Gurney. No, Gurney just straight up walks up to him and like stabs him in the throat, and that's it. There's like, see, it happens so fast, Nick, that you don't even remember it happening.
There's no fight.
It's just he's like, Rabin's like kind of walking away, and Gurney calls out to him, and then he's like, oh, Gurney, okay, let's do this. I'm paraphrasing, obviously.
Was he getting on the ornithopter?
kind of. He was like walking towards one. Yeah.
Were they like really scared? No, that was a different
scene. No. Because he turns around and starts walking towards Gurney. He's like, all right, yeah, okay, let's do this. Like, I've done this once before. But like the whole interaction, literally Gurney walks up to him, stabs him in the neck. Like, that's it. There's no fight.
Okay. So I wrote off Rabin because when he was in the like throne room with Fade and like the Baron and all that, yeah, and he just like walks off, I'm like, okay, he's slipping away. He'll be back in like the next movie. That's the last time I remember him. And I was like, oh, he's just going to like slither off.
Yeah. It kisses Fade's boot and then disappears forever.
Yeah.
He becomes such like a wuss. Like, he's like running he's away from the Fremen. He's running away from Mod Deeb. Like,
I think he got caught up in the hype, man.
Yeah,
sure. He got spooked by Mod Deeb.
Yeah.
I also like the organicness that everyone doesn't know how to say Mod Deeb or Mod Dib, right? Because the Emperor says it like in a really weird way, but that's also like
Christopher walking away.
I like that there was not an enforced like this is how you say it.
Yeah,
like, there are slight inflections every time someone else would say his name, and I'm like, that's how that would happen because like you throw that against like a bunch of different groups of people, they're going to say that a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and I liked
there's a hyphen in there, man. It's going to confuse us English speakers.
Princess Arulian, Arulan, Arulian, Arulan.
Yeah, close.
Florence Pugh's character. One thing I've noticed from the books, the little bit that I've listened to, you know how many scenes started off with her like talking into her little diary recorder thing?
Yes.
Kind of explaining what's going on. That happens just about every other chapter in the book. It's her like recording something like that. So I thought that was a cool, like, after I started listening to the audiobook, I was like, oh, that's kind of a cool thing that they carried over, kind of. But I loved her character's realization of like, oh, wait a second, what if Paul's not dead? What if Paul is Mon Deep? And they're like, eh, nah. Man, you know what? You and I should just reshoot both these movies to be like 5 minutes long. I feel like it could just be like two conversations.
Paul's like, no, I don't wanna. I'm gonna wait.
But yeah, like, what do you think of the reveal that Paul is half Harkonnen?
I thought that was interesting, but also like, they explain that away really quickly because it's like the Bene Gesserit are doing like some weird like breeding generational like cross pollination of like the best things in the universe.
They're making their power plays.
Yeah. But yeah, but she was unaware of it, which was nice to know.
Oh, Paul's mom.
Yeah, she didn't know it until she drank the blue stuff.
Jessica, okay, so by the way. We got to quit calling her Paul.
Lady
Paul's mom.
Yeah, Lady Jessica. Yeah, but okay. So explain that though. They drink the blue liquid. It must have like some sort of power to like allow her to see all the memories of the prior mother incarnate or whatever they called it. And then like Paul was able to see like the every anything. I don't know if he just got all of like what Lady Jessica saw, or he got like some other version of it.
Yeah. I don't know.
See, that's... But like, why is this blue liquid just like passing along memories? Like a floppy disk, you know?
I don't know. Maybe it like the poisonous nature of it. This is just me trying to explain it away. The poisonous nature of it gets their mind into a state where it's like so close to death that it like allows the transfer, right? Like the other, I forget exactly what the mothers are called.
Yeah, no, there's a word for it. And like she becomes the new one.
But she, like the one that's passing the memories, is able to like, because of the state of the mind of the person who's on their deathbed, is able to like, I don't know.
So in real time, I was thinking about this in the movie, right? Like, not bragging, but in real time, I was like, they don't realize she's pregnant. And I'm like, I don't think that's a good idea. Or I was like, that's probably going to be a problem that she's pregnant. Like, it's either going to kill the baby or like something else is going to happen. And then like by time, like it's done, the old, you know, the old mother was like, what have we done? She's pregnant. Like, you didn't know that already, Miss. Oh, I know everything. And like, there's like a room full of women. You don't notice.
Right. You didn't see the glow.
the thing, the person that you've decided is going to be the new one. Like, that's some light vetting going on there.
Right.
And like, it wasn't even like, I wonder how that's going to play out. She's like, she's literally, what have we done? As if I know something bad is. So it's like, we're not going to vet that any further than that. We're just going to walk into a cave and be like, you're it. Let's go. I want to die right now.
And that's the other thing is like.
Barely an inconvenience.
Ah, man. Again, like people might look at this as like. I don't know how you could look at it this way, but like things that play out in the movie, like contradicting themselves. But I think it's done intentionally. And the result of like really great writing. But as much as Stilgar is on board with the Lisa and Al-Ghaib thing, a definitely noticeable part is also like, well, in order for Paul to be that, you know, Lady Jessica, you have to be this. So let's make it happen.
Right.
You know? Right. So where he's like, almost playing into trying to manipulate the prophecy of actually like happening, you know?
Yeah. People believe and see what they want to see. You know, they've waited so long, and I mean, when you're right at, when it's within your fingertips and you have like literally almost everything, you're like, well, that all makes sense. So you might as well just be that thing too. Yeah, let's go. Let's make things happen.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
But that sucks to like have all like the right pieces to the puzzle, but like you're still wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, what else can we talk about before we, because I want to talk about, obviously we've spent zero time talking about Fade Rotha, really. And like the interaction there, that final duel.
One thing I want to talk about Fade Rotha is like, poor guy, he's just getting used by the Bene Gesserit. Like, he's just, they're just trying to like treat him like a little doggy. But then also,
Lady Margot carrying Fade Jr.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's that too. Yeesh. But, and I don't have straight answers on this. I just have to read the books, because also, like, I can read all I want on the internet. No one gives like the straightest answers, because apparently there are no straight answers in Dune Universe. There's just a lot of interpretation, which
especially around the Harkonnen. Am I right?
Yeah. Uh huh. yeah. That's a very strange thing that old Frank there conjured up. A lot of questions about the Harkonnen. Lots of questions. Are they cannibals? Do they eat people? Clearly, they're pet things that are also female slaves of some sort, eat themselves. I don't know. It's all weird. Yeah. All strange.
Why do nephews make out with their uncles? Kind of odd.
Yeah, right. Well, that's, yeah. if you know, you know. Harkonnens.
What are you going to do?
But Fade's a great character. He once again, I think I must have messaged this, but like he reminds me of like, I wanted them to do what Rebel Moon did to their main bad guy. Like, don't really kill him, just like kind of kill him and then just like bring him back cleverly. I was like, dead. Shucks, damn it.
Yeah.
That fight could have been a little, I don't know. The whole like, I'm kind of tired of the like, the double stab thing.
Yeah.
That really weighs on me when that goes down. Even like, you can like, they even played it out even longer. Like, oh, maybe Paul really did get it.
Yeah.
No.
I will say I love, you know, one of my favorite parts is like when Paul does the little salute thing.
Yeah.
But like, did you notice he does the Atreides salute, right? But he says the thing the Fremen say, like that, what was his name? It's not Jarvis. that's that's from Iron Man. But the Jameis. Yeah. shut up. But what Jameis says before their duel, may your blade chip and shatter or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he combines the two, like pre-battle salute things.
And Phage is like, yeah, whatever, bro.
He's like, yeah, chip shatter, whatever.
He's like, this looks like this is gonna be fun. Yeah. I like his demeanor about everything. Like everything's just like a game to him. He's like, ooh, we're playing a game. We're doing cool little salutes. Let's do this. Let's do the thing where we stab each other.
I like when he's getting ready to, you know, take Paul down. He's like, oh, so anything I should know about the pet? Like, you got it. Hey, so what time should you need to go outside? Like,
yeah.
What time should I feed her? Chani was not happy.
Yeah. Oh, Chani. She just rides off into the distance. Sandworm.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of like what they're setting her up to be. It's kind of like the actual good guy of the story. Like, I feel like not the knowing
person.
Oh my gosh.
she's kind of one of the guys though.
Yeah, dude. For real.
Good bro. She's one of the good bros.
Yeah, great bro. But I not knowing anything of what's to come, I feel like she's going to be like the leader of the Fremen resistance, right? Could be totally off base there, but that's where she seems to be trending for me.
I think she's going to Thanos it up and just like retire at like a little house in the dunes looking at the sunset.
They actually said Dune in this movie too, by the way.
Oh yeah. What was that? That's the original name of the planet, yeah?
Yeah.
It's not Arrakis. What?
No, I was just trying to see if you had to think I froze or something.
No.
this node's doing great, by the way. Haven't had any freezing issues since I replaced it. Yeah, But yeah, I think that was one of the things that he whipped out in the like council scene. He's like, oh yeah, well, you know what else I know? This planet's actually called Dune. And everyone's like, Lisa Dunkheim!
I read it in a book, though, yeah, but whatever.
Totally would only know that if I was your Messiah.
Yeah, I don't know. Tricky.
But yeah.
Paul's such a nice guy.
Do you think Butler and Chalamet like did their that fight?
Yes.
Like up until like the Star Fox like triple barrel roll that Paul does over Fade, like
oh yeah, and like yeah, like completely just arm locks them or something like that.
Yeah, super cool. Like
against the light. The shadows, silhouettes. You see
their silhouettes. Great scene. But yeah, and then so Fade gets defeated, and Paul's like, "All right, Mr. Emperor, I'm marrying your daughter and taking over." Like, and the Emperor's just like, "You got it, bro."
I'm retiring. This is nonsense.
Yeah, I'm too old for this. Like that part did seem very super easy. And
that's what I mean. It's like a 10-minute like here's the end of everything. Like this whole goal here, like the plan, all done. 10 minutes mm-hmm. flat.
Yeah. But then we're just left with Gurney being like, oh yeah, so all the other houses, they're not buying this, Paul. So what do you want us to do? Paul's like, how many nukes do we have left?
Well, that's why he didn't hit like the actual fort. You're not supposed to use the nukes on other people. Like that's the point. That's why he blew up the wall that kept the storm out. with the nukes because it's like a little loophole. Like, you're not supposed to use the nukes against people. So he just hit the ground with them, which then led to their demise. So that's the whole thing, is all the houses have nukes.
Yeah.
But like, there's like a treaty or whatever that says like they can't detonate without like themselves being detonated. Like, basically everyone would just nuke you if you nuked anybody.
Sounds not ideal.
But like, so like part two is the second half of the first book of Dune.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought Messiah was next, but Messiah isn't next. Messiah is like later into the future. So
aren't there like 20 books?
Well, there's only like four or five that are written by Frank. The rest are like the bastard books of his son, which people don't like. There's a lot of Frank purists, and like,
dang, not even his own blood gets the support. Nope. That's ridiculous.
Nope.
Wow.
So
his son did. I think I said this in the first episode, but his son did say that like these movies are pretty book accurate, and probably like his dad would probably be proud of these.
But he makes a lot of money. Like, he's not going to say the opposite of that. He's selling the IP. Like, he's making a lot of money.
That's true.
Say that.
So you're saying you don't like him, Nick?
Who?
You.
Don't like who?
The movies.
Oh, I love the movies.
Are you sure?
They're awesome. I don't have any context to not like them.
That's true. Yeah. And so after watching this movie, I proceeded to listen to the soundtrack for like 2 weeks straight.
It's in your Crushers. So great.
Oh my gosh. In the Crushers, it's a literal dream. As it was written. Not to like totally nerd out on music stuff, but like, man.
It's Hans Zimmer.
The stuff that they, the stuff that he whips together with his team, like tonally, is so like brilliantly done. I love it so much. It's so good. And all this really did was make me really want to play Dune Awakening. So bad. I spent the next several days just being like, when is Dune Awakening coming out?
Did you watch
Dune Awakening videos.
Okay. Did you watch the one from the devs where they're like talking about it, like how they went on set for the movie and all that stuff? Did you send that? Okay. Mm-hmm. That was a good video because they were talking, they were getting nerdy about lighting in game and all that nonsense. And I was like, oh yeah, I like when people talk about that shit.
It sounds, I mean, the premise sounds really cool. An MMO in the Dune world, and it's got like heavy survival aspects and base building aspects, which, you know, we're fans of.
I like how they described the progression of it. Like, it starts off as a pure play, like survival, obviously, but once you get out of, like, you're not going to die from being in the desert. It becomes more of like political survival and like survival within the game and like all that stuff. So I was like, that's cool. I wonder if it'll ever come out and if it's going to be good.
Yeah, and if it'll stay as intended. Mm-hmm. Not pointing any fingers or anything, New World, but...
Psych. We're just going to change your mind, two betas in, and be like, you know what? Pivot.
Two betas and like five release delays later. Yeah. By the way, it's a completely different game, guys. Hope you enjoy.
Did they lean more into PvP or they lean away from the PvP? How did that play out?
I think they leaned away from it, I believe.
Yeah.
I think Dune 2 was a great follow-up to Dune 1. Like you mentioned, both movies encapsulate the book. And there's 3 and 4 coming, movie-wise?
Allegedly 4. Definitely 3. But 4 seems pretty confirmed as well.
All right. So what Nick, you informed me of this. So what are they saying 3 and possibly 4 would be covering? Are we going straight to Messiah or?
I think there's like a book or something before Messiah. There's still more because Messiah is basically like, I think, the children of these characters. So I would imagine 3 is going to round out our current character base. And then like, if they continue on like this, you call him Danny. I don't know how to say his French
Denny.
Name. Denny. Yeah. I imagine 4 would be like a time
jump. We're on a first name basis.
Yeah. I imagine 4 would be like a time jump, but I'm no expert. But that's what would be my guess. Because at first I thought it was Messiah because I was just ignorant. It was like, oh, Messiah must be like the third book or something. Right. But these two movies are one book and then there's like 5 books and Messiah is like 4 or something. But like the time jump thing for Messiah is where I was like, that's probably not the next one because I feel like they're not just going to drop old Timmy out.
They're just going to be like, all you young actors who have built the movie franchise, thank you. But
thank you for your service. Bye. Who are the younger versions of you now? Well, let's get the newest blood in here.
And also we're just not going to finish like the whole holy war, like...
Yeah,
flying up into space from the planet
cliffhanger
thing that we left here.
Barely an Inconvenience. That's just all just get wrapped up in like in a prologue in the third movie.
They actually got up there and like, you know what, Paul, you're actually not so bad.
We're checks good. Out. Yeah, it's all good. Queen's Gambit actress. She is
Anya sister, Taylor Joy. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I thought that was cool that we did get to see her adult self. And not just the fetal state talking through weird Bene Gesserit mind tricks.
Who's very Zendaya from Dune 1, but like way less. We only got the one scene instead of like the 7 scenes.
Was it a shoulder? Was it a shoulder turn?
Yeah, it kind of was turn? A little bit, yeah. And
gotta have that.
One thing you gotta note though, too, is that scene. Well, dude, if she comes in the next movie, obvious time jump because she is unborn.
Yeah.
And in that shot, she's
at least 16.
Yeah. But also, they're on Arrakis and there is a body of water.
Mm-hmm. Well, Arrakis used to be a water planet.
Yeah. That's the whole, the lease on Al Gaib is to usher back in the green paradise of Arrakis, right?
Didn't Paul say that too? And like they got real hype or something.
Of course, yeah. Of course.
I remember that.
He knows what he's doing. That's actually why they save all of the fluids from the fallen Fremen in that like reservoir. Like,
yeah.
They plan to use that to usher in back in the vegetation and stuff. I thought it was a cool scene too. First off, it's very hard to tell where the water was because it was so like still and clear. Yeah. It just looked like a massive cavern of like underground buildings. But the scene of Paul and Johnny like on the dunes where he's like, yeah, like back on I don't remember what his planet's name is, like, this would all be water.
Yeah.
And she's like, what do you call it? Swimming?
I
love that. That's just like,
that was good.
She doesn't like, she's never seen a body of water like that. So rain and swimming are just completely foreign concepts to her.
Water just falls from the sky?
Wow. Yeah, wait, hold on. Can you say that again, please?
We park our starships in the water, by the way. Those things, they just are in the water.
Yeah.
We have so much of it. That's how we store them.
Yeah. You don't have to drink like your pee, body sweat, like condensation that you saved in the suit all day or like that you stole from your fallen enemies' bodies.
Yep.
You just turn on the faucet. Excited for what's to come. And there's just a plethora of like material that they can pull from for a movie franchise. So we'll see what happens. Definitely getting a 3, most likely getting a 4. Who knows from there, but I'm excited. It's great.
Sure.
I got to finish the audiobook.
They're just great movies. Like, all the Dune stuff aside, like, they're just very. Oh, and I had the they call them D-Box at Cinemark, but they're like the haptic feedback seats.
Oh, really?
I think it is mildly like my impressions of VR, where it's like it could be better, right? I expected a little bit more, but it did bounce between just like 10% like distracting to like 90% cool. Which isn't too bad, but like, it's not just vibrating, like they tilt a little bit. So like when they any like fight scene where they're rolling, like it like does like a little jerk and like tilts with it.
Did they blast sand in your face?
No.
Could you imagine Anakin on Arrakis?
He would be a very angry Darth Vader, yellow eye Vader for sure, just like in full rage mode. But also, did you see that image that I shared where it was like the parallels between Paul and like Anakin? I thought that was so cool.
That was very cool.
And I've seen a lot of those where people are running parallels between like Dune and something else. And they're all like cool. Like, what was it? There's like a war movie where like the Baron, like they parallel with him coming out of like the oil. Just a lot of parallel shots like other notable movies that influenced the director. And I think that's cool.
That is cool.
That like he just kind of literally just draws parallels to things. He's like, oh, this one shot from this one movie, let's do that here because it's dope. Yeah. But like, it's totally not copying because it's so aesthetically pleasing in this Dune verse that, you know, you're not like, oh, that's Anakin with the angry evil stare. But yeah. Also cements Paul's fall from grace too, because poor Anakin.
Yeah, for sure.
Got the hood up, went full Sith.
Man, Denny's a great, great director.
Apparently, allegedly.
Prisoners, we watched for Jake Gyllenhaal. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Great movie. Enemy, another movie that I personally watched for the Jake Gyllenhaal episode. Great movie. Sicario, I haven't seen one.
Dude,
heard it's amazing.
Sicario is so freaking good.
Arrival, amazing sci-fi movie. Loved it. Blade Runner, have not seen that, but looks really.
I fell asleep during that one in the theater.
Oh, so that must be a trend from Blade Runner to Dune, because it's Blade Runner, Dune Part 2.
Yep.
Ever since Blade Runner, Denny is like a sleep aid.
I want to watch Sicario now. I kind of want to watch Sicario. That's a good movie, man.
Yeah. Yeah, excited. If you made it this far, thank you guys so much. If you enjoyed it, please consider subscribing. Leave a comment. Let us know who you think would win. Pre-Darth Vader Anakin versus Paul Atreides in a duel in the throne room. Who do you got, Nick?
Anakin could wipe the floor with him.
Pre-Vader?
Yeah. Anakin?
You think? I mean,
pre-Vader is like arguably stronger than Vader.
He's got the voice. Not really. Though, it's similar to the Force.
Does it? I mean, I don't know. Yeah, but is he using
hand-to-hand combat's very good. Very good.
He's got to disarm Anakin first.
I mean, Anakin's got to disarm Paul too.
I think the lightsaber would go through the little tooth that he has of a sword. I don't know. That's the one, Anakin.
That's just rude.
Yeah.
I guess we'll never know unless there's an epic crossover to be had. Maybe that's next year's March Madness.
Oh God.
We just put Dune characters head to head against Star Wars characters.
Captain Rex versus Gurney.
I think Rex would win that.
See, that's tricky. It's tricky. Yeah. Aquaman versus
Duncan Idaho.
Aquaman Idaho. Idaho.
Who would be the Star Wars equivalent to Duncan Idaho?
Probably a bounty hunter of some sort. Probably Cad Bane or something.
No. Because Duncan was
Boba Fett.
Was another one of who's another clone like Commander.
I mean, he would be like Captain Rex. Cody would go up against Gurney.
Hmm. There you go.
I like if you want to do clone for clone, I would do it that way. Rex would definitely have to go up against Idaho.
What a dumb name, by the way.
I know.
epic sci-fi universe.
Guys, got Paul. Literally got named Jessica. Idaho. Yeah.
Duncan, I could see, but like
Duncan Idaho. Idaho?
Come on.
It's in our universe, so.
True. But yeah, anyways, thanks guys, and see you next time. Maybe Dad and Chad will eventually return to Showboys. Never know. Tune in, find out.